This Weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Pandemic shortfalls. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend here. Coming up this hour, providing vaccines to those who want a shot comes with tremendous financial cost. Since states are already short on revenue, where will funding come from? Also, how to defend yourself from porch pirates who love to spoil the holidays by stealing deliveries from your front door. Plus, on the personal finance front, examples of money issues that are years in the making, leading to today's current concerns. And a guide to buying the gift of technology this holiday season.
My money goes to the Amazon speaker. They push them harder than the other companies. They're more invested in them. Google is known for dabbling in things and then just walking away. And the sound is improved, I think, on the new Echo, which you can pick up for $70.
Jeff Graham at USA Today with a technology shopping guide. Well, state leaders say they are short billions of dollars in funding needed to successfully provide COVID-19 vaccinations to all Americans who want to be inoculated by health officials' goal of June. It's a story by Stephanie Armour, health policy reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Stephanie, take us through this.
Yeah, well, I mean, the federal government is paying for the vaccines, and they're sending along some supplies such as, you know, gowns and masks and that sort of thing. But states still have a lot that they need to pay for. They need to do public outreach campaign. They need to set up vaccination clinics. They need to hire people to do the vaccinations and also to follow up, because these are a shot. You need to have two shots in all the cases. So the states that we're talking to say that they're really concerned about their ability to pay for and get this all going at a rapid enough clip to meet the goal of getting everyone who wants a shot to have one by the end of June.
Wow. All right. So what are some states saying? I know it will differ based on size and population, things like that, but what's a typical cost?
Well, that really varies from state to state in terms of their numbers and population, but a number of the states that we talked with, one of the issues is that their budgets have already been squeezed so significantly by the pandemic. Like the sales tax revenues have fallen off significantly because people are staying home. So they're already in a situation where they have to have a balanced budget that's required, but they are wrestling with how to pay for the vaccination rollout, which is estimated that states need, they've said, about $8 billion to do. So some states are looking at, you know, where they may have to cut back, like on education or other healthcare programs to try and deal with the hole that they're facing.
So are there supply concerns, too, with other equipment? You referenced that the states are sending, you know, gowns and things like that. Are there some supply shortages along the way?
Yeah, and this is what surprised me, actually, as I worked on the story, is the Government Accountability Office put out a report in November. And as part of that, they had talked to states about what their concerns were, and about a third of them said that they were greatly or completely concerned about having sufficient supplies to administer the COVID-19 vaccines. And that number did surprise me. And when I talked to states, they said, you know, yes, the federal government is providing some PPE-related supplies, but they also are looking at supplies that they need for ancillary staff, like the cleaners who may work in the healthcare clinics where the vaccinations go on, supplies for the public that may be coming in to keep them safe. And right now there's already a shortage of gloves that's happening. So that sort of surprised me that was that significant a concern.
We're speaking with Stephanie Armour, healthcare policy reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called Getting COVID Vaccines to People Will Cost States Billions They Don't Have. And there's one person in your story, too, you quoted as saying, this is not a short-term operation. So a lot of us think, well, we'll just show up somewhere, roll up our sleeves, get a shot, come back 3 weeks later, get another shot, and that's it. But it's obviously way more logistically complicated for the states.
Right, right. It's an ongoing process, and not only that, there's ongoing issues in terms of following up with people, cold storage for vaccines, a whole panoply of things that they're saying they need to do. Now, it is true that Congress and that they have gotten some funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. I think it was about $340 million so far. So that has been a help, but the states that we're talking to say that it's really a drop in the bucket in terms of what they need, and they're hoping Congress will, you know, in the next stimulus plan, provide some funding to help with this. Because, you know, the federal government's really set up this whole system of getting the vaccine to states, but the states now are kind of in the driver's seat when it comes to the rest of the work.
Yeah. You referenced, too, states competing for resources.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is one of the challenges that I think Pennsylvania's health secretary had told us that they're concerned about, you know, that returning the same kind of hunt for resources and competition that they saw in the spring. And that their feeling is that the federal government stepped in and did more of a coordination approach that would prevent some of that from happening again.
Thanks, Stephanie. Stephanie Armour, health policy reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Dell Technologies' end-of-year sale is the perfect time to upgrade tech. Save big on the latest computers powered by Intel Core processors for your small business. Don't forget to shop servers, storage, and thousands of top-brand electronics, all with free shipping. Call a Dell Technologies advisor to help you find the right tech for your business needs at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and proven adaptability are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. This portion of the program is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. As the pandemic progresses, consumers remain at home and continue to shop online, causing a giant influx of holiday packages delivered this season and creating the perfect scenario for porch pirates. Here's how to protect yourself from these thieves from the home security veteran, Travis Miller at ADT Security. Travis, what should we know?
Not only, as you mentioned, this time of the year with holiday gifts and other type of shipments happening to people's homes, but we're also seeing in the midst of, you know, the COVID situation we're all in, that everyday essentials as well are being shipped to home. So, you know, the amount of packages that are being delivered, it's just reaching an all-time high. And really what we're seeing is, like, this is resulting in billions of dollars of loss every year. I saw this crazy stat the other day that was calling out that porch pirates have accounted for 5.4 billion thefts over the past year. Jeez. It's just crazy right now.
5.4 billion, billion with a B?
Billion with a B. $5.4 billion in thefts over the past year. You got it.
And so, yeah, put that number in perspective. Is that as high as it's ever been? Is it tailed off? What do we know about that?
No, it's one of the highest, and that's because of the fact that, again, as I mentioned, right, this time of the year especially, we have holiday gifts being shipped to people's homes and otherwise. Additionally, we just the everyday essentials that people are doing in their COVID environment that we live in, right? And even to put it into an individual perspective, that just estimates it's one in five Americans have experienced a package theft at the start of the quarantine.
Yeah. I mean, I see it on a neighborhood Facebook page, you know, just near me. And it's not so much accusing somebody of theft, but it is the constant request of, hey, you know, Amazon said I had this particular package delivered on Tuesday. Did anybody get it? You know, and that very well could be a porch pirate, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, right? It's like, and the way I look at porch pirates, right, it's opportunity or crime, or it's a crime of opportunity, if you will.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you're looking at that, the more that you can take away that opportunity, the better, you know. Like, one way to look at packages on a porch, it's almost like a welcoming mat for an intruder or theft to approach your house.
Yeah. Have the growth in video doorbells eliminated any of that?
You know, they've definitely helped, and you're right. Having eyes and ears on your porch, on your package, through things like the, you know, an ADT video doorbell or a two-way audio camera, they definitely help, especially when you're dealing with the companies, right? Because you're able to show proof of loss, and that maybe it wasn't delivered, as you mentioned, down the street to a neighbor's house or whatever it may be. And the super cool thing these days is, like, nowadays with these different type of video-type solutions, you can have them set up and be notified if it's, like, say, a person on your porch versus the neighbor's cat just running across it, right? So you really can get specific at what you want to see.
All right. We're speaking with Travis Miller. He's the VP of Sales at ADT, and we're talking about how to protect yourself against porch pirates this time of year, and especially in 2020 when, obviously, deliveries have gone wild. What else do you recommend?
You know, a lot of the services and retailers out there will offer calendar reminders for when to expect a package, or even shopping alerts, right? So another recommendation I would have is to make sure you sign up for those when they're offered. And then even if they're not offered, put it in your Outlook calendar, put it on your phone, right, these type of plays, so that you're notified, you know, when that package is expected to arrive. Because as I mentioned, right, take that welcoming mat off your front porch of that theft or intruder. You know, and I think the other thing would be, you know, as this time of the year thing, you know, it's getting darker earlier, right, get some lighting out in that front, right? These type of deterrents can also help in these situations. And you already mentioned one of them, Gordon, which is, you know, community and neighborhood, right? So connect with that neighbor if you're expecting a delivery and you're not going to be home, that maybe they could, you know, swing over, pick it up, get it off your front porch for you.
Yeah, because this is not, well, I would say deliveries in general are not going to slow down. So, I mean, we've got to do better. What about the retailers themselves that ship this stuff? They've obviously got skin in the game. Can they do anything differently?
No, you know, to my knowledge, Gordon, and again, not my expertise, if you will, but, like, what they will look for is they will ask, and they, you know, personal anecdotal information or feedback, if you will. Like, recently had a package in the last, you know, 2 months that disappeared off my own porch. And one of the things that, you know, hey, you know, do you have any type of footage? It was even asked to me if I had footage, because that's where you were going with the video doorbell, and otherwise it's just becoming more and more common, you know, that we can help provide information to these retailers if and when these type of things occur.
Thanks, Travis. Travis Miller from ADT Security. From big budget movies to lure families over Christmas to serious-minded films to attract award nominations, Hollywood productions are appearing on digital platforms, often at the same time or soon after they debut in theaters. It's a trade-off for filmmakers who know fewer people will see their movies in the ideal setting they had envisioned. We get more from this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
No, you probably won't be heading to the movie theater to see the biggest blockbuster of the year on Christmas Day after you open your presents, but there is a lot of action online with a holiday movie rollout upon us. Ellen Gammerman of the Wall Street Journal has the story. Ellen, one of the biggest movies this year is Wonder Woman 1984. What's the story about this one?
Wonder Woman 1984 is one of the big would-be blockbusters of the season, and it is opening both in your living room and in whatever theaters are open, you know, and can accommodate it. So really, it's kind of the first of its kind in appearing both on HBO Max the same day, Christmas Day, that it'll be in theaters. And a lot of other big movies have put off their openings till next year. But Wonder Woman, after repeated delay after delay, just decided to go for it this Christmas.
As you mentioned, a lot of these movies are going to be online only. Are they hoping to reap any kind of reward from that system?
They're hoping for subscribers. In the case of Wonder Woman 1984, they're hoping that HBO Max will draw in a bunch of new subscribers. And for streaming services like Netflix, the effect is a little harder to measure. It's kind of it's a fallback for some of these movies that are co-produced by Netflix, but had really envisioned a bigger theatrical rollout. Now the majority of viewers are probably going to see it at home. And Netflix is really all over our list because they have been involved in producing a lot of holiday TV shows and movies.
We're speaking with Ellen Gammerman of the Wall Street Journal. One of the biggest ones that I've been reading about on Netflix is Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, because Chadwick Boseman is in it, and of course he's passed away. What about that one? What are they hoping for?
Yeah, this is the last screen appearance, the final performance on film for Chadwick Boseman, and for that reason alone, a lot of people are going to want to see it. It's also another adaptation of an August Wilson play, just like Fences was, produced by Denzel Washington and Netflix, that really looks at the power of Black artistry and the exploitation of Black artistry. So in addition to Chadwick Boseman, you have a big performance by Viola Davis in the title role, and a lot of music, and she plays a blues singer in a standoff with white record company people.
Ellen, what are some of the other movies that you did preview for your story, and what did you think of them?
Well, they really range. I mean, the one thing that unifies them is that there are a lot of big stars coming out on screen this holiday. We've got Meryl Streep and Nicole Kidman and James Corden are all three of them in The Prom on Netflix, which is a movie musical version of the Broadway show about these sort of washed up Broadway performers who go to small town Indiana to help a girl who wants to bring her girlfriend to prom. That's on one end of the spectrum. You've got all the way over to The Existential Journey of Soul, which they talk to scientists and spiritual experts and try to create a film around, an animated film around the meaning of life and what is a person's purpose in life, all through this cartoony story that has elements of humor and, of course, a lot of Pixar animation that people will recognize and want to check out.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Gamerman. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Steve Jobs used to talk about how much time and energy we waste picking out clothes every day. That's especially true in the work-from-home era that we're in now. But just because a suit's not required doesn't mean you want to get so casual you look like you just rolled out of bed. Cuts Clothing has the perfect answer. You don't need to choose your outfit. Just throw on a Cuts shirt or polo, some pants, and you look professional and feel amazingly comfortable. The quality you need for business, the comfort you want for anything else, home or away. And for winter, their new hoodies made with custom Hyperloop French Terry fabric are essential. They spent 4 years getting them just right. I love that they're soft, comfortable, warm, and made for the long haul. Try one on. You'll be a Cuts Clothing customer for life. Cuts is loved by your favorite athletes, entrepreneurs, and even podcast hosts. Seems like everyone is wearing Cuts these days. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. cutsclothing.com/Gordon.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend here. I'm Gordon Deal. Coming up this half hour, a tech gift shopping guide. Also, financial issues that fester for years, plus losing the magic of snow days if you're a student, and the big growth for a little food pantry. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, are you making a list of holiday tech gifts to buy this year? Jefferson Graham at USA Today is here to help with a series of shopper's guides. Jeff, what about iPhones?
Well, the iPhones are hard to buy as gifts, but if you've got the money, you know, go for it. And because, you know, the problem is you're giving somebody something that they have to do a monthly subscription on. But I think the iPhone SE is the best deal. You know, if you're going to buy a used iPhone, I'm not a used iPhone, but a cheap iPhone, they start at $400, and the iPhones go from $400 to $1,100. So the SE is a cute, compact, iPhone that people will understand and it will not cost you a fortune. The new additions are the iPhone 12s. There's four of them, and they start at $700. It's $700, $800, $1,000, and $1,100. So that's a tough gift. But there's not a day that goes by for me that people don't say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about buying one of those two iPhones for the holidays. Which one should I get? And I'd say the SE or the Mini. The Mini is the cheapest of the new ones, and it's got the screen that they say is four times less likely to break.
Okay.
So that's a cool thing to have.
One of the things we've seen a lot of marketing muscle behind recently, too, are these smart speakers. What do you like on that front?
Okay, so you have to decide which variety you like. Is it the Amazon speaker, is it the Google speaker, or is it the Apple speaker? My money goes to the Amazon speaker. They push them harder than the other companies. They're more invested in them. Google is known for dabbling in things and then just walking away. And the sound is improved, I think, on the new Echo, which you can pick up for $70, or the Dot, which is $40 this year. The Apple HomePod Mini is their new and improved, cheaper, $100 speaker. Doesn't sound as good. It's cute. It doesn't sound as good. But if you're in the Apple system and going between Apple Music and Apple TV and Siri and all that stuff, it's a nice thing to have. I like using the Amazon speakers as TV speakers. That's my favorite thing about them. Ditch the soundbar. Don't worry about the wires. Put two of these Amazon speakers by your bed and listen to TV. It sounds great.
We're speaking with Jeff Graham, personal technology columnist at USA Today. He's written a consumer guide about tech gift ideas for everyone in your holiday list. Are you a fan of the Apple Watch?
I'm not a watch person. I think it's a nice watch, but I'll give you the caveats on it. They say you can get in for like $150. That is true. You can get in to get a watch that doesn't do much for $150. I mean, yeah, it tells time. But if you want all the cool things like the health stuff, like the heartbeat and the blood oxygen and some of that fun stuff, you're going to have to spend at least $400. The other thing is this year they introduced something called the family plan, family sharing, where you no longer had to have your iPhone in your pocket if you're going to have the watch with you. That's been an issue. And it's been hard for parents to buy watches as gifts, knowing that they also had to give their kids an iPhone at the same time. So now they can buy one watch, and the parents can then give the watches out to the kids and have the parents' watch associated with the iPhone. Not the kids. So it gets to be more affordable.
Thanks, Jeff. Jeff Graham, personal technology columnist at USA Today.
So there you are, shopping online. After carefully comparing every detail to find the best deal, you finally go to checkout, and there it is, promo code. And you think, wait, I could save even more? Yes, you can. There's a free browser extension I found called Honey that scours the internet for promo codes from over 30,000 online stores and applies the best one it can find to your cart. From tech and gaming products to clothes, gadgets, even food delivery. In fact, that's one of the ones that saved us a bundle. Honey found an online code for every meal we've had delivered since we started using it. We've been able to save money and support our favorite local restaurants. You just click apply coupons when you check out anywhere online, and if there's a coupon, Honey finds it. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out on free savings. It's literally free and installs in a few seconds. And by getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting this podcast. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/Gordon. That's joinhoney.com/Gordon.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. If money issues had the urgency of a broken air conditioning system on a 100-degree day, we'd all be in great financial shape. But Jonathan Clements, founder of HumbleDollar.com, says all too often financial troubles are years in the making. He's got examples. Jonathan, explain.
So one of the problems with managing money is that if we don't do the right thing, often we don't suffer the dire consequences that come out of that decades and decades, and that means that we don't have that same imperative to deal with it today. Now, if the stock market drops 20%, we're well aware of that and we respond to it. When we start to think about issues like saving for retirement or preparing for nursing home costs, they seem so far into the future that our inclination is, maybe I'll wait till tomorrow, or maybe I'll wait till next year or next decade. You just don't feel the same incentive to get up and do something about it.
Yeah. All right. So you referenced kind of this living precariously, but it has this this snowball effect. It just puts pressure on you the more you ignore it.
So for a lot of Americans, they're ill-prepared for financial emergencies. There's this statistic that's come out of the Federal Reserve that a lot of people have heard, that roughly 4 out of 10 Americans couldn't handle a $400 financial emergency without either borrowing the money or selling a household possession. And we saw the consequence of that earlier this year when the coronavirus hit, the economy shut down, a lot of people got tossed out of their jobs. Almost immediately, Americans were in deep financial trouble because they had no sort of financial backstop. So if you want to avoid that in future, you need to take steps today. And that means building up some sort of emergency fund so that if you find yourself out of work, you're at least able to cover the household bills for a few months.
Something else you referenced here, too, overlooking inflation.
So again, inflation is one of those things that year to year doesn't really seem to matter. I mean, over the past 10 years, we've had 1.7% annual inflation. I mean, who's going to get excited about that? And yet, over time, that 1.7% annual inflation can put a big dent in the spending power of a dollar. If you're retired and you're living off interest from a collection of bonds, after 25 years, the spending power of that interest from that bond, those bonds, is going to be cut by 34%. And that's why, as a retiree, you can't simply put everything into bonds and live off the interest. What you need to do is keep some stocks in your portfolio so there's some element of your nest egg that's continuing to grow faster than inflation so that you're in good shape later on when inflation starts to bite.
We're speaking with Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. Another item on your list, too, long-term care insurance.
So when we think about long-term care insurance and we look ahead to retirement, we say, do I really want to worry about that? That's decades into the future. But the answer is yes. We all need to think about how we might handle nursing home costs or long-term care costs if we get care at home. How are we going to pay for that? And there are basically three strategies. One, we can say, I just can't afford it. I'm going to fall back on Medicaid. And if I end up in a sort of second-rate nursing home, well, that's my lot in life. I can't do anything about it. Mm. For people who are wealthy, who have a seven-figure portfolio, they can say, I'll pay for it out of pocket, and that's how I'm going to handle nursing home costs. But sort of the people in the middle, the people who have some savings but not that seven-figure portfolio, who might be looking at nursing home costs and saying, I don't want to have to spend down all my assets and then fall back on Medicaid. What I want to be able to do is pay for this somehow, and that means taking out long-term care insurance. If you're going to do that, ideally you want to be buying that long-term care insurance in your 50s.
Explain your point about failing to diversify.
So a lot of us have poorly diversified portfolios. What do I mean by that? You might have a lot of money in your employer stock, or you might be heavily focused on healthcare companies or technology companies, or it might be simply that you have all your money in the U.S. and you haven't diversified into foreign stocks. And perhaps, you'll roll along for decades suffering no ill consequences as a result of having that undiversified portfolio, and it might never matter. But if your employer turns out to be the next Enron, or it turns out that the healthcare system gets nationalized, or the U.S. stock market goes the way of the Japanese stock market, suddenly that lack of diversification is going to cause a heavy price to be paid by you.
Thanks, Jonathan. Personal finance expert Jonathan Clements at HumbleDollar.com. Today, I'm here with Josh Hunt, Executive VP and Chief Business Development Officer at the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Josh, if I wanted to start a new business, what is it that makes Michigan so attractive?
Yeah, if you want to start a business in Michigan, we have unbelievable assets here in Michigan for our entrepreneurial community as well, in terms of opportunities for growth through access to capital, services, great universities, and a talented workforce that can grow through those startup businesses here in Michigan. We've seen examples of companies grow from an idea to over $1 billion valuation, companies like Duo Security and others that have grown here through the strong ecosystem of support that we have for high-tech startups here in the state.
To hear more of this interview with Josh Hunt from the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, go to thismorningwithgordondeal.com and click on the MEDC microphone.
That's This Morning with GordonDeal.com, and click on the MEDC microphone.
Well, first it was prom, then it was high school football games. Now the pandemic is erasing yet another cherished school tradition, and that's the snow day. It's a story by Felicia Gans, reporter at the Boston Globe. Felicia, what's going on?
Well, I've found that most districts in Massachusetts are canceling snow days, and they don't, of course, frame it that way. The goal here is to have a continuity of learning. A lot of the superintendents I spoke to just talked about how much learning loss these kids have dealt with the last 9 months. They were out of school from March to June, and then a lot of them actually haven't gone back. So a lot of these districts are doing fully remote programs as is, or they're doing hybrid programs where some of the students are doing remote learning half the time anyway. So these are students and teachers that are already very used to remote programs. And the superintendents look at it like there's no reason to cancel school when we have these programs set up and working.
I think there was a kind of a piece in your story where you said something along the lines of, or somebody said something along the lines of, boy, it's just another lost day if we give the kids off for a snow day in what has not been obviously an ideal education environment.
Right, exactly. And I think it's part of just making something feel a little bit normal here that, you know, in a winter where education's being interrupted so much anyway, why interrupt it an extra day? But of course, the argument on the other side is also normalcy would be giving snow days. Yeah. Normalcy would be, you know, having that joy of waking up and, you know, your parents running in and turning off the alarm and the spoon under your pillow and all of the little rituals that kids do to try to hope and pray for a snow day. That would be a way to kind of create normalcy. So there's that argument on both sides.
Right. Anybody saying that, by the way?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's several superintendents that have said that. The one of them that I didn't speak to is one that made national headlines back in October, actually, in New Jersey, who was one of the first to come out fairly early in the season and say, this is part of the magic of being a child. We're not taking this away. And I spoke with a superintendent up here in Vermont in a much snowier area than I even live in here in Massachusetts, who said, yeah, this is part of being a Vermonter. You know, I spent my entire childhood loving these snow days, and I don't want to take that from kids. But she also brought up another issue, which a superintendent in Massachusetts told me as well, that there are serious concerns about connectivity and equity here, that if you have some students that don't have stable internet connection, and might lose power during the storm, will have even less stable internet connection, and their parents are working, they have trouble getting online, whatever the situation is, it makes it so that it's not really a fair access for all students. Yeah. And so the concern of one of the superintendents I spoke to is if we don't call it a snow day, if we call it a remote day, then the kids that weren't able to get online, they just lose a day. They don't ever make that up. Whereas when we call it a snow day, everyone makes it up at some point and everyone gets the same amount of education.
Thanks, Felicia. Felicia Gans, reporter and producer at the Boston Globe. You can spend a lot of time on social media, right? So addictive and time consuming. But don't you wish you were actually learning something? That's how I felt until I found Blinkist, the app for your phone, tablet, or browser that condenses the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books down to 15 minutes. I like Blinkist because I can listen to condensed books that look intriguing while commuting or running errands, like Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. Blinkist is thought-provoking and time-saving all in one. Podcast, too. Join 15 million others broadening their knowledge with Blinkist. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/morning to get 25% off and a 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/morning. We'll finish with this. What began as one family's effort to keep their children engaged in their community in the midst of an isolating pandemic has mushroomed into a massive new project that will feed hundreds of families in the Washington area over the holiday season. It's a good story from The Hill. Amber Marchand, a former aide to Missouri Senator Roy Blunt, said she started a small food drive earlier this year as a way to teach her kids about needy families. But neighbors filled the box she put in front of her Northern Virginia home so quickly that she decided to expand. when the nonprofit Martha's Table asked for 250 sandwiches per day. So many people signed up to make them that the Marchands had to buy miniature refrigerators from Costco just to store them. Now, months later, Ms. Marchand's new nonprofit, Be the Good, is set to deliver its 30,000th sandwich. Be the Good distributed more than 320 care packages over the Thanksgiving holiday. Ms. Marchand says they plan to deliver more than 560 bags, each with a $20 gift card, along with non-perishable food over Christmas. The care package is a 25-pound bag of food. That'll do it for this hour. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.